In the talk this afternoon with you, I would like to explore this relationship a little further of the inner and outer world, with the recognition, acknowledgement of the mutual influence in both directions. Just a little bit about being late. This is what happens. If one lives in a small town, population I think is 8,400 in Totnes, and even though I kept away from the town and walked along the tracks, one does tend to meet people that one knows. So it ended up as a few minutes mostly talking about you lot. He asked me what I was up to, so I told him. Anyway, there's this inner and outer world. So as human beings in this engagement with life, we can say that we have an impact upon the world around us, but it is not one-directional. The world also makes its impact upon our lives as well. So a human being engaged in this interconnected relationship with life, with the world around, we have some fairly significant deep questions to ask ourselves, and they need to apply without exception to the larger scale of things and the smaller one, the we might say impersonal, the larger, and the personal. And those questions do need to run rather deep. They are rather sacred questions, and one of those questions would be, what is my relationship to this world, and what am I offering? And that question is a question for the meditator. It's a question for the person who thinks deeply, who reflects on the relationship to life. And with the question, we ask the question, or that which is similar, but we obviously need the space inside to let the question run deep. So initially, it might just seem a kind of theoretical idea. What contribution am I making to this world? What do I have to offer? What confirms the giving? So it's the inner looking through the senses to the outer, and a question which explores what is coming from the inner to the outer. That question may well need to settle deeply. What that means is, as deep as we go with the question, as deep as the answer will emerge. The question and the answer, in a way, will come from the same place. And once that question has a vitality and an authenticity to it, we will know, because of the regularity of fresh perceptions, creative ideas, offerings that we can make. So that means in the deep questions of life, There isn't the singularity of the answer. It is the answer, if it's an authentic one, which is appropriate and meaningful for us now. It may well last in the long-term future, but there will be, like the trees around, there will be branches, there will be offshoots of the same question. And it's rather a precious question for the meditator, because it can be asked at any point in our life. We can live the question, let it stay with our body sensations, with our heart, with our mind. And one of the confirmations of the outpouring, the outflow from it, may show itself in extra questions that go with it, like, what am I willing to let go of in order to engage in something of a different order, of another level? What am I prepared to do without? What am I prepared to make space for in order for something else? And that's rather important for us, because we easily experience already a rather full life. So how on earth are we going to do more when the life already seems extremely full and we can't complete what we're already doing? So at times, you say, okay, what can I have to offer? What way can I be creative, imaginative? What can I dig out of this being to share, to present? And if the daily life feels full already, then that long-standing spiritual word starts to come in, renunciation. What can I renounce, even if it's a bit on the difficult side, in order to make space for something fresh? And to repeat a little bit, it's the living of the question. I'm just going to bend down for the usual sip of water. The other feature of this, and perhaps we could include in the category of some of the deep urgencies, some of the deep spiritual issues of this existence: what is the impact which the world has on me? And what I have in mind here, the world shows itself through our five senses. What we see, hear, smell, taste, touch. And the presentation from the outside comes to us. But often it doesn't come in isolation, is the important thing. It comes with experience, some cases. It comes with knowledge, what we read, what we heard, what we watched, where we went, who we spoke with, and so forth. It comes with knowledge. And it can touch much of our being. That which touches you, it could be global issues, the environmental crisis, the global pandemic, overpopulation, diminishing resources, consumerism, etc., etc., the environmental impact, and much, much more. That comes to us. Some of us have been in places and really witnessed it. We have knowledge or experience or information. The impact, what is the impact on you? It's a critical question. What is the impact? And for some, find it difficult to deal with scale. Remember, we're, all the teachings are a liberation teaching, is the core issue here. It's on scale. So what I mean by that, certainly in the past year, means the 15 months, the COVID-19 period, as well as preceding it, you and I have learned a great deal about the catastrophes which are going on. The famines, the fires, forest fires, the tsunamis, the destruction of the rainforest, the abuse of fossil fuels, the pollution of the air, diminishing habitats, the impact upon animals and creatures, and more beside. We witness it in all the climate and all the variations which are going on. It's a lot. That's the scale. Still the same question. You're a human being, I'm a human being. What is the impact on us? And in the looking, thinking about, talking about, observing, the impact leaves you overwhelmed, disheartened, worried about the future of life on Earth, and if you have contact with kids and what's going to be for them and the generations and so forth. If the scale of it feels too big and somewhat overwhelming, and you feel trapped, helpless, it's too big to contemplate, then it's tragic. It's tragic. Because it becomes the block, it becomes the wall for the human being to be able to respond. The view being, what can you do? I am so small, who am I, who are we, or whatever. And these issues are so big. And the feeling, thought, view, like with the guided meditation earlier today, assembles, puts together, the word in the Pali is samkara, an activity that which comes together. Comes together is samkara, is activity, like karma, it's an activity. So there is an activity which comes together, which forms in the mind, in this case, as well as speech. It's formed together, and in this case, the outcome of that formation is given such authority, it becomes one's reality. The state of mind is formed together through feeling overwhelmed by events out there, having an impact on us. It leaves impressions. We identify with the impressions. And out of the impressions, we make a reality. And out of that reality, we are helpless. Not because of what's out there, Not at all. I didn't create it. It's this vulnerable circumstance of the human being who identifies with the samskara, the forming together of a picture, an image, and a view, giving solidity to it, substance, in the impression, and not understanding that the impression is not the reality. It's an impression, and it keeps us helpless. And in the East, this impression is called Maya. M-A-Y-A, you've heard the word. It's called living in a kind of illusionary existence. And we can find ourselves, millions, living in Maya and confusing the Maya with the reality. The teachings, like we did with the breath, we did with the body, we engage with the feelings. The teachings are to get out of the Maya, out of this fragmented, contracted, finite, limited state. And when we get in touch with the reality, the actuality, we know it because we're empowered. That's how we know it. The reality engages with the reality. And we have to be honest with ourselves. And as we are doing on our retreat together, really, for the honesty here, really recognize the view which we can feed each other, not realizing we are kind of metaphorically building the walls of mutual self-delusion, manifesting itself as helplessness. Poof, tragic. This helplessness feeds the very thing we don't want. Wow. Wow. What a way. And it's not like that every day. Nobody is living in Maya moment to moment, every hour of every day. There are regularly demonstrations of our empowerment. The Buddha used this word power a lot, not in the way that it is being consistently abused, with all the violence and exploitation of the earth that comes through the abuse of power, but uses it in a very healthy way. And we, together, women and men and children, we've got to recognize or rediscover our power. And the practice is a practice of empowerment. And what I have in mind with regard to this, you and I and others, we demonstrate this regularly. There will be a situation where there is the forgetfulness, which is a good forgetfulness, of feeling powerless and hopeless and nothing we can do, where you act not for yourself, on behalf of somebody else. or on behalf of a group of people, or on behalf of the animals, or environment, or all three. You take steps to drop things which are unhealthy and unwise and not beneficial for you, for people, and for the planet. And these are all acts which are not an illusion, it's not Maya. It is an act which is of service, of kindness, and it's moved us to respond. And it's the recognition of these which show we have power as human beings, we can act, and that conviction that goes with it will dissolve living in an illusion of helplessness. Some things, I'm kind of tempted to go into a long talk about the environment, but I'm currently doing my best to resist it. On another day, maybe I'll catch you on that one. With our mindfulness and meditations, which are never an end in themselves, they serve as a preparation. It can be an illusion, it can be a manifestation of Maya to believe teachings and practices are all about being in the present moment. This also can be a deluded thought. Yeah. So right now, for example, the present moment is... Laptop is in front, you can see, I haven't got my glasses on, but I recognise some of you through the little boxes at Zoom. I try to remind myself that Zoom is a four-lettered word which rather beautifully ends in om. It kind of keeps me going. And Zoom. 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 Om. Or Zoo, if you like. Love. I don't like zoos, I'd rather they close down. But anyway, it's another story. So there's the outer immediate moment, being in the moment. The moment is I see your lovely faces and the voice is going and the things in the living. This is the moment. It would be a pity to be living in this moment all the time. Gosh, be a bit... God, it would feel very contracted. I'm a human being, have a much bigger sense than just being in the moment, much more to discover and realize. And as the saints and sages have often commented, I don't have to go outside the front door to understand this world and respond to it. There's a good truth for that as well. So just to come to the point with you, I may, in my exploration of the human experience, and with all the scientific evidence and so forth, as well as our own experience, we may be at a real point in our life where we have the courage to ask the question, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? It doesn't matter how old or how young you are. What is the values which as a human being we can engage in? Because in a way we could say, we might say, in our inner change, the earth is the witness of it. I'm quoting the Buddha here. And if you and I as human beings don't find ways to change, or there is abuse of a relationship to the earth, or the abuse of power by those with that kind of influence, the earth is a witness of that as well. So the earth kind of mirrors back to us our relationship to it. And we, our relationship to it, makes its impact. And therefore, the question would be, in a way, what way in my life can I find the empowerment, cooperate with others, make the steps necessary, in which, all being well, and it may not be in our lifetime, the earth witnesses, because it's supported and it gives us support back. And this is the, what should we call it, the dialogue, the conversation. I, as a human being, make an impact on the world. The world, the earth, makes an impact on me. I want to understand, to be clear about what the impact is I have on the world. I want to be equally clear about what impact the world has on me. It's the great conversation or dialogue of this life on earth. Let me have another sip of the water. There are, in all of this, in the matters of feeling and the heart, as you sense, I'm a very big fan of the exploration of the feeling light and of the heart. I can't imagine that the mind alone can work out an empowered life. But heart can give a lot of nourishment and make a real, be a factor, not the cause, but a factor in this. And what, and the two areas I have in mind, there's several matters of the heart. One is inspiration. The examples of inspiration. And at times, you and I have the privilege, it is a privilege, to either know or listen to or watch or hear about human beings who are really inspirational and that can touch a very affirmative response in our life. We need each other for inspiration. And if at times you don't feel inspired and nothing is really touching for that empowerment, that liberation of the being, say, okay, I'm going to dedicate some real time here to seeing who and what can give inspiration. I can't find it in myself. I can't find it in my job. I can't find it with my friends or whatever. But there are some bodhisattvas, as we call them, great beings around. Let me see if I can have some contact with her, with him, with them. Let me listen. Let me explore. Let me spend time with them. Let me be in that group. You know, just with the XR, Extinction Rebellion, as you know, probably one of the biggest causes for environmental damage of any specific, one of the biggest, are these ocean-going liners, you know, which people go on their tours with. So there were two, about 15 kilometers from here, at the sea, and parked up there. So few of the Extinction Rebellion people, including two good Dharma friends, one of them teachers, they got a canoe, bless them, and put a held a pole with the XR flag, and then they paddled out to this huge ocean liner. This is last week. And rowed around this huge ship with the passengers and crew there, just making a quiet protest. And the newspapers had this picture of these huge ships. You can imagine how much of the resources it takes with these ships. And I'm told that if you stand, if you're a passenger or crew on the ship, the air pollution on board the ship is higher than a very busy street in the middle of a city. They're not even healthy to be on these things, apart from all the fossil fuels and all the other stuff that goes with it. So there's a picture of this huge ocean-going liner which holds thousands of people, and two friends in their rowing boat rowing around it with this little flag, XR, Extinction Rebellion. I thought, just five star. I thought, that is inspiring. Just things like that. I was at Extinction Rebellion. I like these people very much. I'm so delighted to be associated with them. It's a privilege. We 3 days up in London on the streets there, and the meditators, the Buddhist meditators, who sometimes just like to meditate anywhere. So down the main street leading to Parliament, which should be closed as early as possible and converted into a museum, but at the moment it's half alive. It's too confident. No, it's 90-10% alive and mostly a dead chamber. And all these meditators in a long row sitting there, cross-legged. I knew some of the friends of mine. They've done retreats with me. I looked there and just, wow, what a nice way to meditate in protest there. So sometimes the street is where our empowerment might be. Attending meetings might be. It's the writing of things, the good analysis, etc. So let's find our empowerment, and let's say, being a bodhisattva, that's one who serves others, being a bodhisattva is a great undertaking for a human being. And therefore our meditations and our friendships and our inspiration, and let inspiration be part of that if it feels a bit low in our life. Terrific people around. Terrific. I just had a leaflet put through my door just before I came in here. And one good lady in the town, I've been here 40 years. She was here, I think, before I came. And she's been a consistent green councillor in the town. I think she was mayor for a period. And she just keeps doing it, year after year, regardless of the age, of just reminding all of us of the importance of green values and caring for our environment and much, 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 much more. So the initiative can come out of our mindfulness. It can come out of our meditations. It can come out of our quiet reflections. It can come out of what other people are doing. And we might see that on the television, on the YouTube, read a book, whatever it might be. There's also, in our exploration here, part of this way of life, and a good example would be this Zoom retreat together. And I would regard this as equally important there. And what I mean is, the culture of the West, forgive the generalization here, but quite often, let's say, be more polite, the culture of the West gives exaggerated emphasis on the satisfaction for the self. That's what it does. And it gives it priority in education, it gives it priority in possessions and ownerships, in the making of money, in work, in lifestyle, to satisfy the self. And that is a strong emphasis which has been kind of spread around the world, as we know. It's a bit of a contrast to the Dharma teachings, which point without any hesitation to the emptiness of the self. It couldn't be more night and day in the view. It couldn't be more of a contrast. One is, there is the self. I am permanent, at least for the length of the existence. I come first. I matter, or I and my family, if one's a little expansive. And this is the priority. It's for me, or it's for us, our small unit there. And that sense of self and other selves is so fixed in the mind, it's another samkara, it's so fixed in the mind, it's not easy to see out of it. And what is this self that's so important? Where the hell is it? What is it? What do we mean by it? And somehow we're all building it up, crashing down with disappointment, holding on to it, terrified of aging, pain, death. I. Whoa. It's not working for us. You know, Ramana Maharshi, I like what he said. Very much the language of the yogi. Yeah, Ramana Maharshi is one of the great, lovely saints of India, of the 20th century. He said, if we think money will make us happy, then, and the more money we have, the happier we will be, then we should go and get out and get more and more and more money. You can get more and more happy, get so much happy, because you've got more and more and more and more. Does anybody do a reality check? Does anybody look at the news? Does anybody take notice of the lives of the rich and the super rich and the haves? And all the stress, tension, alcohol, drugs, mistrust of other people, breakdowns of family. Not much happiness in it. So when we look and when we explore, can we find in our life, back to the same question for a moment, questions in life which are a challenge to us but have the intention to expand our life, freedom of being, to expand the life. And something starts to shift. These samkaras, these formations, which seem so real and called about me, whatever that is, or her or him, those samkaras, the question begins to shake them. They begin to collapse a little bit. Not because you've spent bucket loads of money with therapy, or tons of loads on money on retreats, or whatever it might be, though that may help. But more importantly, the asking of the question is to shake some of the structures which have built up in the mind, which we've given far too much reality to. And in the shaking of them up, something emerges out of it. And these teachings are the real shake-up of the inner life. They're no picnic. Sometimes people come and say, "Oh, Christopher, I've come on the retreat," which is fair enough, to reduce stress and pressure, not to feel anxious, and they are genuinely worthwhile endeavours. But sometimes we carry another expression of Maya with us. And the expression of Maya, of an illusion in the mind, is, I want to live calmly, happily, without stress and anxiety, and continue exactly as I've been doing. Not a chance. There ain't no chance for that. That when we speak of change, the speaking of change is to really explore different avenues of what change is. Because it would be a great pity, and it happens, because I'm in the business of this, people will come on retreat, including Zoom retreat, so you're getting the health warning at the moment, or on a residential retreat, or go to the countryside, and I'll do some lovely workshops, and there's some beautiful ones around in all the traditions, contemporary and ancient. And the person may say, and you may say to yourselves, and you may say to Christopher too, "Oh, Christopher, it's really a lovely retreat. I feel so much more relaxed. The meditations there, I appreciated, da 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 da." And it is a genuine, authentic experience. Remember, this is my job, so I'm not talking out of thin air here. It's a genuine, authentic experience. But you'll have to ask yourself, is it because in the retreat, there is the absence of everything else? I'm taking time out from everything else, and it might take, as you often know, a day or two to settle in. So as the memory and the pressure from the external world gets less, because you're in retreat for some number of days, you're in the countryside, you're in this lovely ongoing workshop or whatever, as the surrounding world has less impact, of course you're going to feel less stress. You have to, because there's more distance from it. And then a person will say, and you can imagine how many times I've heard this in the past 50 years, "Oh, Christopher," when everybody says, "Oh, Christopher," oh my God, what they're going to say, "Oh, Christopher, I did this lovely retreat with you. I experienced some real happiness. The stress was just dropping off me. I felt so Free! Oh my God, here we go. I felt so free after the retreat. And it stayed with me, Christopher. One day, 2 day, 3 day. I was meditating every day. I was doing my yoga and my Tai Chi, and I was only eating organic food and whatever it might be. Oh, wonderful. 4 day, 5 day, 1 week, 2 week. But Christopher, gradually, I lost that experience, that lovely happiness. I started going back to McDonald's again, the death sentence, or whatever. You get the point. Slight exaggeration, but you get the point. Why? That's the question. Why? It needs some understanding to come. Not that you walk out on your husband, your wife, your kids, your job, and you go and shave your head and put on some curtains and go and live in Thailand. But it needs some understanding. What is the change in my relationship to my outer world so that the outer world doesn't have the grip on me? Yes, the calmness is important, the relaxation is important, the peace of mind, the reduction of stress, it really is important. But the relationship to who and what is around you, it requires an understanding of that, so it just doesn't have the impact. If that understanding may not be able to articulate, but if that understanding hasn't come in, it's not easy, I'm not saying it's a picnic, but if it hasn't come in, slowly but gradually, you'll begin to feel that tiredness coming back in, that stress coming back in, that pressure coming back in. So therefore, the theme of the talk, at the larger level, which took a big chunk of the talk, and at the personal level, which is very important, really important, matters insofar as not to forget that mindfulness includes the outer. That's all. It's not just about you. It's not just about me. It's about the willingness to give a genuine priority to the inner and the outer, to the relationship to, whether it's both, whether it's personal or whether it's global. This is the mark, the indication, the, shall we say, the standpoint of a human being. And sometimes, in really precious, and it can be in a surprising way to ourselves, we engage in a retreat, we meditate, we listen to the teachings, we really dedicate ourselves as many hours as we can. Some of the benefits may really come through for you. And you go back to where you were, and you find, to your delight, you're actually looking at her, him, this, that, in a really fresh way. And you just know that you're not transferring, so to speak, their stuff, their issues, because they're human like you and me. They may still be responding, acting, reacting in the same old way. There may still be things which we don't like to hear. But it doesn't upset you. You don't get angry about it. You don't contract. You don't lose any sleep over it. You understand, oh, this is how he is. This is how she is. This is how they are. And you can keep your peace. You've got the freedom of the voice to share and to listen and to speak. And you know something deep in the being has changed. And we may not be able to remember some special moment in that retreat, in that solitude, in the silence. There may not be anything which is outstanding. So you can't say to yourself, oh, in that moment, I really realized something. You can't. It may be, but perhaps not. But you've got the authenticity of your experience. There's been calmness, but some understanding has come. And that's both personal and global. And this is the great challenge and the great endeavor of human existence. Let's have our quiet minute, shall we? Okay. May all beings explore these formations in the mind. May all beings find inspiration and empathy with others. May all beings live with wisdom with regard to the inner and outer world.